Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 146. It's a bit of a mouthful. My name is Selena, and I am here with Mitch, Caitlin, and Brittany to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 2, episode 3 and 4, School Heart and Inca Mummy Girl, a couple of regular old episodes in which nothing at all exciting happens. It should be fun. Before we get into the discussion of the episode, as always, we want to remind you of our contact information. If you want to contact us about this episode of Rewatchable, about Buffy, about anything else that we do, you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable if you still use Twitter after that horrible thing that happened. You can find this post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. All right, let's start off the episode as we always do with fun facts so you can get to know the hosts' voices. Let's start this week with Brittany.
Yay, that's me. I've been on a social media hiatus for about less than 24 hours, and I came back and the whole internet had burned down. So that was fun.
What is happening? Why do I not know anything?
Twitter's
is it the timeline thing?
Yeah. Which is so stupid. But yeah, anyway. Oh my God, this is my fun fact, Mitch.
Sorry that there's a lag.
They're going to think so, you're like, Brittany.
So wait, is this like really happening? Like it's not a report, it's real? Like Twitter's really not going to be like one by one by one? It's going to be what they choose to show you?
I don't know.
That's it.
Okay, someone else have their fun fact.
Why don't we run to Mitch?
No, Brittany, you can go. I'm sorry. I think there was like a 3-second lag on my end. I didn't mean to interrupt you before. I was just curious.
Okay, let's move on. Well, Caitlin, why don't you give us your fun fact?
Okay, my fun fact is that I have been bedridden for like 2.5 weeks.
It's not fun. It's so sorry. Oh.
So basically, I go to work in a lot of pain, and then I come home and sit back in bed.
What is happening? Do you just have to wait it out, or?
I think so. What I found says that this sort of thing can resolve itself in 2 to 6 weeks.
Ugh.
So I'm like maybe half better from where I was when I first had the issue, but it's still very painful. So I'm kind of just waiting it out at this point.
That's so.
And it's very boring to spend.
Yes. Yeah. And like you can't even say, because I was going to be like, oh, well, you can like fill your time with TV, but that's like so dumb. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. That's horrible.
I'll cheer you up, Caitlin, by making you remember that there's a Flash Supergirl crossover that happened. That's a big deal. It's more fun than being sick and hurt,
happening.
I guess, right? Yeah, so that's fun, right? That's good.
I know,
and positive.
I'm very excited about it.
That's cool. Oh my God, wait, that's Glee actors coming together again on another superhero show. Praise DC. That's so cool.
So, Mitch, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is I've been listening to Hotline Bling, the Kidz Bop version, on repeat for 2 days now, and I cannot explain why, but it's just so addicting in a horrible way. And that's it's just it. It's happening.
That is
so strange.
Yeah.
Because like I have a thing where I love seeing Kidz Bop versions of really nasty songs, and one of them, I don't know if you would consider this nasty, but All About That Bass, I love the Kidz Bop version of it. They don't even sing some of the Taylor Swift songs fully, like they cut those out too. It's really fun. It's like a fun little like hobby of mine to like look up Kidz Bop versions of my favorite songs and hear what they censored them to for 10-year-olds.
That would never even occur to me to do.
That is the most random thing I have ever heard. That's amazing.
That and Radio Disney cuts, because Radio Disney cuts are even funnier, because they keep the singers, but they like mess around with their voices, and it's just so great. They make words out of the existing words sometimes. It's great.
Okay, well, that sounds like something we should all check out. That actually sounds
very
pretty funny.
Niche thing.
So I guess rounding it off with my fun fact, I'm gonna keep on my stubborn tradition of not talking about myself, but talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is like everything to me anyway. So, well, there you go. So I wanted to talk about, because this is something I meant to bring up last episode and I forgot, is that as you may know, if you're newbies or you might not, there was originally a original pilot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. In the media these days, there's been a lot of talk about the original Game of Thrones pilot and how it was terrible or something. Yeah, the Buffy pilot is amazing, and we should definitely go back and watch it when we finish the show in like 20 years. And in this original pilot, actually, Willow was played by someone else. She wasn't played by Allison Hannigan. She was played by a girl named Riff Reagan. And it was definitely intended to be a very different sort of character. And it's very interesting, especially like with these couple of episodes where we're seeing Willow do so much with so little. It's so fun to imagine that she might have been played by someone completely different. And sort of related to that fun fact, their original choice for Xander was actually Ryan Reynolds. So there you go.
No kidding.
Some fun alternative casting to imagine. Yeah.
Now timely with Deadpool coming out soon.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
I think Ryan's doing quite well without Buffy.
I think so too. I don't think it would have hurt though, but it is funny to imagine like if they'd had Ryan Reynolds in that role. Like, not that Nicholas Brendan isn't very attractive, but I mean, Ryan Reynolds is this, like, supposedly, because they were trying to keep Nicholas Brendan unattractive for Xander, because they were like, oh, you're getting too fit now, you have to stop working out so much. So, like, imagine that with Ryan Reynolds. It would have been fun. So anyway, expect lots of these fun, because we know you guys listening have been asking for more fun facts, so we will try to incorporate some more of them into the show. But for now, it's time to actually discuss episode 3 of season 2, titled School Hard. Are you guys ready for this? Are you ready to school hard? Yes.
I've been told I should hotly anticipate this episode, so here we go.
Here we go. Okay, well, the synopsis, written by Mitch, I believe, goes as follows. In this episode, Spike is finally here. So, woof. Grr, arg. I don't understand this. Okay, whatever. Buffy is competing to be the worst student at Sunnydale with classmate and burnout Sheila. Tasked with creating a parent-teacher night to die for, Buffy gets more than she bargained for when a new big bad named Spike rolls into town with his princess-slash-lover Drusilla. Spike isn't nearly as broody, soulful, or old as Angel, making him the perfect candidate to kill a record 3 slayers. But Mama Buffy ain't having none of that. While everyone is kung-fu fighting, Joyce whacks Spike over the head with an axe, sending him running back to his doghouse with his tail between his legs. Back at the super evil dungeon, Spike fries the anointed one to a crisp before taking his bae to go watch The Price is Right. How do you know it's The Price is Right? I believe it's something else, but all right.
I mean, maybe it's like The X-Files, but I'm assuming that from him just saying, like, what's on TV, he doesn't really have, like, a fandom he follows. He's one of the just those game show tuner-inners, if you ask me.
Oh, that's what you think. Interesting. Yeah. Well.
And I said so woof Gerard because, well, Gerard is, like, the theme of Buffy, and then, or whatever it is at the end of the show every time, but woof, because, you know, he's the name dog, like a dog named Spike, like from Rugrats. Remember that was their dog's name as a kid?
I have no idea.
I don't think Selena watched Rugrats because she's not from here.
No, I don't know what that is.
Well, you know a lot. You know a lot about like the world. I figured you might know about Rugrats, so maybe I should have warned you in advance that there's a Rugrats reference in here. It's not really Rugrats.
Spike
is more like the most generic dog's name you can think of. Other than
I also thought Woof was like, oh my god, he's so hot.
I thought that was the thing. Like,
I mean, I'm not gonna say like, no to that.
Okay, so that's good to know. So that fits in well with our first discussion point, which is actually insert gushing over Spike here. And I added, or Drusilla, because she seems ignored. So go on, do your gushing, if you must. Are you impressed with this new character?
I thought this was like a super fan thing, because super fans seem really excited over these episodes in our personal group. So I figured that would be you guys gushing over Spike. Because I'm like, he's British and has awful, awful hair.
Well, to be honest, I mean, again, going back to my constant list of Buffy and Harry Potter comparison, it's Draco hair. So, you know, you got to take one with the other. But
yeah, but his is clearly dyed. Like, I feel like Draco, like, at least you had the family to be like, oh, that's like hereditary. Mm-hmm. But this stuff, just like, you're going for something and I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, it's true. I guess that's a good observation, actually. But yeah, I mean, gushing over Spike, I mean, obviously, this is a character that seems really cool. I mean, in this episode, I think he's a really intimidating villain, and probably up until this point. And that probably has a lot to do with how we're all like, oh my god, you know, Spike, what is this? Drusilla. It's because, you know, we are being introduced to someone who I think for the first time in Buffy actually seems like a real threat. I don't know if you guys agree with this, but so far, you know, we've had praying mantises, we've had the Master. Okay, he was a little scary, but he was also a little, you know, silly like Spike. I don't know, there's something about him that seems like he could actually be a threat to Buffy. And in this episode, you know, we saw him get very close if it hadn't been for Joyce. You know what
I mean?
He's
definitely darker.
Exactly. He sort of elevates the level of villain, I think, in this episode, which I really appreciate.
Especially with his interactions with Angel, because the way he talks to him shows that he has a certain respect for other vampires, while the Master was all, ooh, you've got something in your eye. And it was all kind of like he was talking to children, but he respects power. You can tell that. But also, in the same right, he knows when it's his turn to take over the power of someone else, a la the Anointed One or even Angel in this episode. So I'm liking that he's dynamic so far.
Yeah, and that's actually one thing, and this is kind of spoiling what's my favorite scene is, but I really enjoy that scene when Spike is first and Drusilla are first introduced, and they come into the lair where the Anointed One is, like, holding court, and that, like, one vampire is like, I will salt the earth with the Slayer's bones, or whatever the hell, and then Spike just comes in, like, you know what, I'm not buying any of this crap, you know, it's, he says, he has his line, he goes something like, it's time we had a little less spectacle and a little more fun or something like that. And I think him coming in with this attitude is probably very refreshing for people who are watching the show going, okay, this is a little bit over the top. Can we just cut the crap? Kind of. That's kind of what he's coming in and saying. And then he comes in with this whole, yeah, I can do this attitude. And then the minute Drusilla walks in, he sort of, that the vamp face comes down. And he's all sweet and protective and all of those things. And I think that dichotomy is sort of like, ooh, we haven't really seen that before. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the best part about Spike is Drusilla at times, because she's just so, like, fun and sensual, and he's not. But when he gets around her, he kind of, like, turns on this sexy face. It's not just that he loses his vampire face.
That's a sexy one, yeah.
Like, the whole thing where, like, she licks his face after she cuts it with the blood. I don't understand that at all. Maybe that's something to do with, I don't know, like, vampire science.
Like, that's blood time, you know? Like,
just to be sexy? Like, is it really just to be sexy?
Yeah.
It's like a kinky thing, Mitch.
I thought it was like, oh, she's weak, so she's absorbing some of his power slowly but surely.
I think it's just a vampire, like, turn-on thing. But your theory is good, too, I guess.
Well, I also find it odd, too, that the vampires can bleed, because I was under the impression that they don't have any substance in them. It's strange. I really don't understand, I think, the vampire science quite yet, because of the fact that they turn into dust once you stake them. Mm-hmm. But they never really seem to, like, when, I don't know, Buffy punches them or something, have, like, a bloody nose. But now we see, you know, one getting scratched in the face and having blood dripping down. And that was almost kind of jarring to me. What did you think about this, Brittany?
I was kind of like, during that whole scene, because their interaction just made me cringe. I was like, she's a little too much for me to handle right now. So I didn't think anything besides that it was, like Caitlin said, sort of like a vampire kinky thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really like vampires. So, like, I guess vampires can bleed. That's something that would have never crossed my mind, because I haven't watched a lot of vampire things. So him bleeding wasn't really...
We've seen Angel bleed.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, you're absolutely right, Caitlin. I forgot about, I think I was distracted once again by the tattoo. When he takes off his shirt after he was slashed by, wasn't it Wolverine, that thing in that episode?
Yeah, claw guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's true, and I you know, I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, I'm pretty sure they delve a little bit more into this at some point. They explain a little bit more about how this whole vampire thing works, but... It just, you know, they drink blood and then they have blood inside of them, and then that makes them feel more alive, I guess. and then they have the blood inside of them.
Spike smokes.
Yeah, that's the same logic. But it's a fair question, definitely.
And I'm also curious to know what happens if a vampire is to bleed either blood out or dried out from not having drinking any blood. Do they turn super craven and they're not even like anything human anymore? Like what? Or does there come a point where they can starve to death or whatever? And I know we don't have those answers yet. I am anticipating them hotly because I really enjoy in all vampire fiction learning the specific vampire science, because I think that that raises the stakes, that allows us to, if we have a vampire like Angel, worry for him more than just saying, oh, he's immortal, as long as we don't stake him, we're good. No, there's more at stake here. No pun intended.
Yeah. Those are all good questions. But let's talk a little bit about Drusilla as well, because like it's easy to sort of let Spike overshadow her, I think, because he does come in first and he is the action character and she's his motivation, you can say. But she does, and like I think I'm going to say Brittany as well, like Drusilla's, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, now I've interviewed Juliet Landau, the actress, so I have to be like, you know, I do like Drusilla, but I do think in this episode it's easy to feel like she's a little too much.
Yeah, I just don't think I get her purpose yet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's like, fair. That's definitely fair. I think I feel the same in a lot of this. But what do you guys think? I mean, we know, you know, she sort of, they have a question in here. What's up with her power sensing? Why is she so weak? She's sort of, at first, I didn't even know she was a vampire. I remember watching it for the first time and I thought she was something else until she pulled up her vamp face.
Oh, really? Yeah. Was it because of the power sensing?
No, just because she was weak and she was like, there was that tinkling music and Spike, we never saw her in vamp face. I just didn't assume she was a vampire.
Yeah, I didn't think she was either, especially because when she entered, Spike took down his face, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, he can't let her know, or like, you know, something like along those lines. Like, she clearly is aware of the world, but maybe she doesn't know that he's a vampire. Like, you know, I was trying to figure all that out. And then another thing I was thinking the whole time was, because I've seen pictures of Spike before, but I didn't know when he came into play or what his name was until today. But I was just like, oh, he's British. And that was the most jarring thing for me with Spike. Was I'm like, he has an accent. And the whole time I'm watching his introduction, I was like, I should really be paying attention to what he's saying, not how he's saying it. But I was so taken aback by the fact that he had an accent.
I like the accent.
I'm sure that only strengthens the comparisons between him and Draco Malfoy, both blonde, kind of, I guess, not broody, but like moody, sassy boys.
Right. Yeah.
British accents. Uh-huh.
But yeah, so any other thoughts on Drusilla, or are we kind of gravitating back to Spike?
I can see why Brittany might think that she wasn't a vampire, because she acts almost hypnotized, and once again, we don't know the science of vampires enough to know if you can hypnotize another vampire. But regardless, it felt like her lack of, I guess, strength or power meant she was either being, you know, fed from, or she was under some kind of spell, but definitely didn't come off as vampire. But it wasn't such a shock as it was, I think, to Selena and Brittany for me, just to see her, you know, doing Sheila later. I was just like, oh, okay, cool, this is a thing.
Yeah, it was. I distinctly remember being a little bit disappointed that she was quote-unquote just a vampire in that episode when I saw it, because I was like, ooh, something else is going on. But no, so there you go. So Spike reveals in this episode, and this is later confirmed because it might just have been another, like, brag, but he said that he has killed 2 Slayers. Obviously, as we know, Slayers are destined to walk alone, so, you know, there's a note in the doc saying they didn't have family and friends. But still, killing 2 Slayers, yeah, it's impressive. That also marks Spike as a serious villain. You know, the other characters are like, okay, this guy's a big deal. Even Angel is like, okay, yeah, this guy, like, this is bad. He is out to kill the Slayer, and this is like a very sort of a mission for him almost, you know. He has a goal and he's here to complete it, and that's bad news for Buffy. It's a little bit cool too, I think, to hear a little bit about, like, even just snippets, because I'm so into that whole past Slayer stuff, you know. Even hearing snippets like when he killed one of them, I'm like, ooh, what was she like? What was her life, you know?
I feel like this, like, bugged me about Giles this week, which is very hard to do because he's amazing. But, like, the fact that he's still, like, learning about past Slayers as the episodes go on, like, you wouldn't know that 2 Slayers were killed by one particular person and that person isn't necessarily gone. Like, I feel like he might, like, should have known that already, but I don't know why. That just bugged me.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, that is sort of going into Giles's approach, you could say, why isn't he teaching her more about the past layers and stuff? I think that's a valid question. I would have if I was a watcher, but you know, I guess we're all just different. So speaking of, kind of going back to Angel a little bit, he knows who Spike is, and he sort of tries to pull off this act in a great scene with Sander, by the way. I absolutely love that Angel-Sander sort of antagonistic relationship, where he comes to Spike, and he's like, "Yeah, long time no see, you know, this was all an act, and I'm gonna, like, help you kill Buffy," but Spike just sees right through it. What did you guys think about that scene?
It couldn't have been any more obvious to me that Angel's still a good guy. He's not very good at being bad.
He's not a good actor.
Yeah. No, he's a great actor. It's fine. It's you know, David's doing what he can with the role because he's trying
to... No, I meant Angel. I didn't mean David.
Angel Boreanaz himself might not be a good actor, right. But it's hard, too, because I think it's tough always when I see in TV to see an actor trying to play a lie that they know is a lie. Because it's like a fine line that you're crossing to not try and make it so cheesy, but also yet still believable to the audience. And I don't think that there was enough realism to the way that David was portraying Angel's portrayal of an angry angel, or an evil angel, if that made sense. There wasn't enough realism there to set me into it. I don't know if I'm the only one that did not buy into it, but I was oh, come on.
Angel's such a flat character to begin with. He has, like, one emotion that's pretty steady. And I think that for him to try to do anything, not Angel himself, not the actor, like, try to do anything outside of that will come off overplayed or underplayed. You know what I mean? Because he's such a, like he's very, like, yeah, he's just the same character. Like, nothing excites her. Like, even when he's, like, right in front of Buffy about to kiss her, it's, like, zero excitement level. Like, the same excitement mm-hmm. level as when he's talking to Giles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just Broody McBrooderson.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, you can chalk that up to an acting choice, you know, actually going and saying, well, he's trying to hold back his emotions, you know, he's trying to be distant. But that's up to you to interpret. I can't say either way what the intention was, but I bought it. I mean, honestly, I bought it, and Sander clearly bought it, so...
Sander was predisposed to
That's true. That's true, and that actually, that we'll come back to that in favorite quotes, I think. We also, in this scene, Spike sort of has this very intriguing line about Angel when he goes, like, "You were my sire, you were my Yoda," and there's a note in the doc saying Vampire Diaries fans might know more about this than Sander does. Maybe not. I would not assume anything at this point. I'll just say that.
I don't even remember the canon of what sire really means in Vampire Diaries. I just remember it being a very big deal. Mm-hmm. And at that, I wouldn't even speculate because I could accidentally guess what it was in Vampire Diaries, which therefore might be true in Buffy. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's an interesting point that we had, like, a new piece of, I guess, mythology pop up. And it was acknowledged by Xander in just the right way. It was like, oh, audience doesn't know it. Neither does Xander. You'll find out later. I thought that was a really wise way of introducing it.
I think, honestly, what's more interesting about that little sentence is Spike going, like, "You were my Yoda." You know, it's like, ooh, what does that mean? Not only is it a pop culture reference we all get, but what is he referring to? There's something interesting here. Like, the fact that Angel knows about Spike and has clearly crossed paths with him before, I think that also just adds to Spike's relevance, you know?
Like, it's, and more, like, than ooh, just cross paths, like, they embrace, like, brothers.
Yes, yeah. True, yeah. Like, there is a history there. And that also, I mean, who knows? Like, that is something that if Spike returns, then we would assume that that would be explored more. That might be really interesting. I certainly thought so. Was anyone shocked when Sheila, another character that probably wasn't that interesting, revealed her newfound vampirism when she was walking behind Buffy? I thought that was super scary.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Like, holding the axe above her?
Yeah. Like, I wasn't surprised, but I thought it was a really scary reveal.
I thought it was just funny that she had the axe when she has a weapon on her face.
That's in her true.
Yeah, because even Spike and Buffy go, Buffy says, "Do we even need weapons?" And he just throws them away. And I'm like, Buffy, you probably do need a weapon. I mean, you had to stake him to kill him. Not a weapon.
But that was
enough.
Like an honor thing, or almost like this was like her. She realized she was facing like a worthy opponent almost, you know? But I mean, for Sheila, to be fair, she'd only been a vampire for like 5 minutes, so she probably didn't realize what her full powers were. Sheila, by the way, I'm sorry. Oh my god, I do not like this character. Like, I just, every time I watch this episode, I'm like, oh, Sheila. I don't know. Was that just me? Am I being very harsh?
She's pretty exhausting to watch on screen. Yeah. I hate watching burnouts because they always bring down my heroes, and the heroes always have to cover for them or try and do something else for them, while the burnouts just mess up everything, or wrong place, wrong time. And it's, you can't trust them. You can't do anything with them. Those kind of characters are tossed away for me.
And so it's just like, oh, I'm crazy about a cat. And I'm like, oh my God.
I was surprised she made it that long. Like, I was expecting when she came on screen the first time, I'm like, oh, she'll be dead in 5 minutes. This will be fine. But then she lasted a very long time and she became a vampire. I'm like, wow, this chick is really not going anywhere.
It's like, it's only a matter of time before Cordelia will discover her body in like a gym locker or something.
Yeah. Oh, did she run away? I thought she died.
She ran away, I thought.
Oh. She's still around. Yeah.
Out in the night.
I can't remember at what point in the action she ran away or from why. I'm assuming she was noticed by Buffy and that she was just terrified of the Slayer, so she ran away.
Oh my God, she still exists in the world. That's even worse. I didn't even realize that. Okay. But so Sheila is sort of, this is a really random transition, but Sheila is sort of raising the axe above her head and she's almost about to cut Buffy down. But when we next see the axe, it's in the hands of Joyce, and Joyce knocks Spike down, saving her daughter in this like really heroic mom moment, which
Molly Weasley.
Yes, totally Molly Weasley. There you go. Ah, I swear there's something here about those two fandoms. So what did you think about this moment? Was it too cheesy? Was it cool? Was it kind of funny that Spike was beat by mom?
I loved it because I think, like, I'm just so happy that, like, Joyce is now kind of, like, you know, in the world a little bit more, because I really like her character. And I think it almost, not that it, like, it raises the stakes for Buffy, because I think Buffy enjoyed not having her mom around in the world, but it kind of, now she has to constantly worry about her mom, like, looking into things a little bit too much, you know what I mean? It kind of, like, leaves a trail of breadcrumbs for her mom to follow, whereas before she didn't have that worry. Her mom just like went to work and came home and wondered why her daughter was so miserable all the time.
Right. And it must be so tempting for Buffy to just tell her, you know, like I think about that, like every time she gets into trouble, like the words must be so close to her saying, I can explain, I have this huge thing, you know, because her mother is just so disappointed in her.
Yeah. And I think that weighs on her a lot.
And so in that sense, I think you're right that it is nice to see Joyce being more involved, even though she, of course, didn't find out about vampires because she never saw, like, they had the
PCP,
which, by the way, I'm going to add a point because we need to talk about that. So she sort of has this smackdown moment of Spike and he runs away. I think he was just beat at that point. Like, I don't know if anyone else had a question of why he just ran, but I think he realized he wasn't going to win. He was beaten down. He was alone. Buffy had a chance to regain her upper hand. You know, I think he realized that he had failed and he needed to regroup, you know?
Was there a horn that I heard in the background? Was that part of the soundtrack? Or was there something, like, I rewinded it to hear it and I could have sworn there was, like, some kind of, like, battle horn, like Lord of the Rings style being blown. And that made me think that he might be going back to a bigger bad that was calling him off of the battle.
I didn't hear a horn. Caitlin, did you hear a horn?
No.
It really could have just been like a trumpet in the soundtrack.
Maybe honestly. It was Sheila. But so, and we had another question here saying, wasn't it strange that Joyce didn't chop into his head with an axe? But remember, she doesn't know he's a vampire, and not everyone's first instinct is to kill someone with an axe.
You know? I think she was I need to get rid of this guy off of my daughter and maybe not be put in jail for homicide. Yeah,
exactly. Like, killing people, like a human being, is a big deal in this world.
Like, just because I think they have a strange face, even though I didn't get a real good look at it, I'm going to play it safe with this one.
Yeah.
That's a good point you bring up, Brittany, that none of the adults get to see any of the action when the vampires are locking them in very well. And I was getting kind of frustrated as a viewer because I knew they had to keep it dark to keep the illusion of they're in the same area with the vampires, but they can't know that they're vampires because it was so dark. The way it was shot, there was barely any lights when the vampires turned them off in the high school. They're running around. There's a good like 5 minutes of confusing action where I couldn't understand what was going on at all. I wish there was another way to do that. Maybe just reveal the vampires to the adults. I mean, obviously Snyder knows, but I think Joyce deserves to know at this point. She's the only one like not in the know out of Buffy's immediate group.
Mm-hmm. Well, Snyder knows something.
Right. That's a very interesting thing because obviously, yeah, Joyce, I agree. I mean, from a viewer's, it must be really hard and it's a big problem not to tell Joyce. But again, Buffy's doing it to protect her, you know. But there are actually, because we've been talking about up until this point on the show, we've been like, why does no one know? How can no one know what's going on? And in this episode, we've actually had a clue that some people know that something is going on. They had that scene at the end of the episode with Snyder and the policeman saying, are we going to tell them gangs on PCP or are we going to tell them the truth? And they go, okay, well, gangs on PCP. The vampire thing, this Hellmouth thing is clearly on their radar, which I like because I think that's much more realistic.
Yeah, I agree. And I liked that little tidbit at the end with Snyder. I almost didn't catch it. I actually rewound that part because I thought that it was being played off as a joke and I heard it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I missed the joke or something. Like, and then I was like, oh no, he's actually like intentionally saying that they want it to be. Like I thought the cop was, when I first heard it, I thought the cop was frustrated with him. Like, oh my God, you called me down here again because of a gang on PCP. Like, oh, that's what you think. But then I rewatched it because I'm like, no, I don't think I heard that correctly. And the cover up was there. So I thought that was a really interesting way to play that off and kind of like made me want more Snyder time because he clearly knows a lot of things that are going on.
I just want more Snyder time in general. I am loving him on this rewatch. Like, he's so funny.
What a strange concept that he knows that there's something, I guess, more than just people on PCP out there, yet let's escape out the windows. Did he sacrifice that one? Wasn't it apparent? Like, did he just say, you go first so we can see if this is really dangerous and see if Joyce / Buffy are telling the truth or what? Because it seems weird that he would be as apprehensive to believe Buffy and to actually take action on that apprehension, not just to play it, but to actually take action on it. And then this guy's dead, and he seems to not even have a conscience about that.
Well, I don't think he necessarily would. I mean, whatever he knows or doesn't know, which we have actually no idea about at this point, I don't think, first of all, that he knew what was going on in the high school until later. Maybe I'm wrong. But I also don't think he has any reason to trust Buffy. You know, he's saying, well, Buffy's telling us to stay here. My instinct is telling me to run away. Why would he listen to Buffy? I mean, she's just a student to him, I would assume.
Who has burned down.
Right, who has burned down a gymnasium. So he's like, well, the window is right there. We can run away. I don't think he knew that there would be vampires right outside waiting to take them down. That's just my interpretation, though. But So that's actually interesting because this was, I mean, as well, this episode, we've talked about Spike being a very intimidating villain and the really dark feel of this episode, and it was almost setting up like someone was going to die. Like, I think so. Like, yeah. When I see this episode, it's so tense, and the mood is there for someone to die. And did you guys have any thoughts that maybe someone, like one of the main characters, anyone would be killed off?
Yeah, I thought Snyder was a goner.
I didn't think
or Joyce,
was
because
die.
The way that Joyce has that one moment where she has the camera zoom in on her like very determined expression, it's like, uh-oh, this
She's
is her final
sacrifice
like...
herself. Yeah, that would have been really interesting. I mean, obviously, I'm glad they didn't, and I think, you know, it's not, you don't need a big character to die to have an impactful, scary episode. But yeah, it was definitely. I'm having all these flashbacks to when I first watched it, and I remember I was so scared, and I was so scared for Sander as well, because I was thinking, if that ploy with Angel goes wrong, you know, like, oh no, and then he would have all the guilt and stuff, like, that would be so awful, so yeah. That was definitely a lot
of potential.
Definitely
wouldn't have Buffy, so I don't think he would let it actually go through. He wouldn't want to lose Buffy for having her friend killed.
No, I was thinking if it went wrong, like his plan. Like if he'd been like, okay, well then we just eat this guy, and Spike would have been like, yeah, let's do it, and like snap his neck, and then Angel would have been like, oh crap.
that's what I'm saying. I think he was still I think Angel still would have tried to stop it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
last minute.
Well,
then he loses Buffy and that's not worth it.
That is, again, going back to what will be my favorite line. That is a question we can ask ourselves. No, I think you're right. I think you would have stopped it. And shout out, by the way, to Cordelia and Willow in the closet. Definitely the best scene of the episode when we sort of reveal after all that excitement and all that danger, we cut to Cordelia and Willow in the closet and Cordelia is praying and I loved it. I love that so much. Also, we don't see those characters interact enough, I think. They're very funny together.
I'm just glad she's still around and like, because that wasn't on last week, like, you know, she kind of like pokes her head and like after they came back from like summer vacation, it was kind of like, hey, did you kill any demons this summer? Like, just checking in. I was like, ah, oh, here she is again.
It's nice that they're always together for these traumatic events, like finding all those dead bodies with the handprint of the TV and then this. Because I think it's allowing them to form a certain bond that it's kind of like, once again, in Harry Potter, where they defeat the troll. And I don't know it verbatim, but, you know, the line of there's certain things you can't go through without becoming best friends. And I think that's happening slowly but surely for these two women in the closet praying away and, you know, worrying about can they come out? Like, is this their final thing? And that bonds you. And I think that's going to be a really sweet relationship to see evolve.
Yeah, that's nice. That would be really interesting. So the anointed one, or as Spike dubs him, the annoying one, I'm so relieved that that has finally been spoken on the show, because I have been about to call him that like 7 times in this podcast already. The annoying one is unceremoniously killed off at the end of the episode. You know, Spike comes back and he's like, you failed me. And Spike is like, I'm having none of this. You know, this is stupid. You're stupid. I'm going to lock you in a cage and fry you, basically. And the anointed one dies, you know, he turns to dust, also proving that he was a vampire, I guess. And yeah, so what do you guys think? I personally love it. I love how easily Spike dispenses with this super annoying little character. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm glad he's gone. I mean, I didn't really get the purpose of him post the master. I was like, is this gonna like develop into something more interesting or what? But then you have Spike come along, who's like definitely a much more dynamic and interesting character, and for him to just like basically play the role of the audience in this episode is like, what is your purpose? I can't figure it out, so I'm just gonna get rid of you and take over because I'm clearly more charismatic than you.
It's clearly flipping expectations.
Yes.
Because it seems like, oh, the anointed one is gonna be the big bad this year. It's like, nope, he gets fried a couple episodes in.
It's actually funny because I was just, not to veer off track, but I was writing the 100 recap the other day, and they did something last episode that was very unexpected and sort of turned expectations on their head with what we thought the season was leading to, and they were going, nope, we're just going to like throw that out and destroy it, and now they have to do something else. And I kind of feel like that's kind of what Buffy does too really well, is that it goes, so we have this anointed guy. He's obviously still going to try to kill Buffy. It wouldn't make sense for his character to just disappear when the master did, because he still has this desire to kill Buffy. But then we're 3 episodes into the season and you know, speaking directly to the audience, like you said, Brittany, a much cooler character comes in and goes, you know what? It's not season 1 anymore. Just off with you. You know, I liked it. I approve. Very much. But that does leave a question, you know. Angel warned Buffy that the Anointed had all these powers and that he was a really formidable enemy, blah, blah, blah. Honestly, I mean, again, this is subverting audience expectations. Just because Angel told Buffy he had powers doesn't mean that he couldn't be killed off, you know. And I really like that they set him up as though he was going to be special and then he just wasn't. And that does leave us with one final question for the episode. Does this mean that Spike is now the new big bad?
I think he has to be, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what else is going on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm still not convinced necessarily that I've seen the last of the Anointed One, simply from the fact that Angel was saying that he had such special powers. If the Master can be resurrected, why can't the Anointed One? I think I'm missing something here, though, because the super fans are too convinced with my theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. I would say the only thing I could think of to argue that point would be that the Master still had bones, and that was the only reason he could be resurrected, and Anointed just turned to dust. So, what are they going to resurrect him from? And who's going to do it, too? There's no one left. Like, there's no followers.
I don't know anything about his special powers. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew more. I mean, other than he seems to have a really strong influence.
Yeah, and he's really good at hand-holding, I think.
Yeah, he is.
He certainly did that a lot, and that's all he did. So that's my conclusion.
Maybe it's like that one lady in the X-Men series that can hold your hand and she'll convince you to do anything.
Yeah,
maybe that's his power.
Maybe. That is a good, actually.
She might want to hold your hand.
Yeah.
Well, I will just say, if the Anointed One ever does return, I will be severely annoyed because I do not like him. And I'm personally glad that he is burned. And we will leave you. I guess we'll head on into our favorite scenes, unless you have anything else to say. Did you like this episode? Did you think there was, like, was the super fans too, like, oh my God, or?
No, I think it was fine. I mean, I knew something was coming. So just because everyone's like, I want to be on this episode. No, I want to be in this episode. No, there's a better episode later. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah,
I'm just going to put
like
in.
I realize this, by the way, I'm totally underserving everything because it's like me and Caitlin can't say what we really think. So we just have to be like, so guys, theories, you know? But
hashtag no comment.
Yeah, hashtag no comment just every time. But no, I mean, I do understand why, because this was a really cool episode, and Spike is and Drusilla are really cool characters. We haven't seen anything like them on Buffy before, so that's definitely something that I enjoy. And I hope to see them again. So moving on into our favorite scenes, I guess I'll just go first because we were just talking about it. So mine is the Spike and Drusilla introduction scene, and I've already said my reasons why. I just think it's brilliant. Again, subverting fan audience expectations. First he comes in, he's all badass, and he's funny, and then he's like super sweet with Drusilla. So great. Great introduction. Caitlin, what's yours?
Selena, you already talked about mine, but mine is the Cordelia and Willow in the janitor's closet. And Cordelia is praying, and Willow is like, ask for some aspirin.
So funny. Such a good... those two characters are so funny. I will just continue. Charisma Carpenter is hilarious. I think she's so great.
I love the way she's kind of slowly integrating into mm-hmm. the group this season. Like, she's not really embarrassed to spend a few minutes with them in the hall or anything.
Right. Yeah, do you guys think that's, like, feels organic?
Yeah, I mean, after you discover a bunch of bodies and almost die, I think you kind of cut the weirdos some slack because you realize if something bad goes down, these guys are going to be the ones to save me.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, true. And she's not – we know this about Cordelia. She's not dumb. So, I mean, that would be the way to go. What's your favorite scene, Brittany?
When Spike is fleeing the school, he like jumps over this like mound of broken door and like flips his jacket up. Like, it was, I don't know why, I thought it was hilarious.
I have to point out to everyone listening that Brittany has called it his quote unquote ridiculous jacket. I take issue with this.
It's so impractical.
But it's his jacket.
I mean, everyone has their thing. Vampires clearly love leather jackets, and that's fine. But, like, Angel's, like, you could, like, have a good fight in that. His, it's, like, a really long trench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably purely aesthetic, you're right. but it's a good aesthetic, though. You gotta admit. I think so. What about you, Mitch? What do you, A, think about the jacket, and what is your favorite scene?
I didn't notice the jacket, so apparently I like it. Yes. But my favorite scene is actually every single time that Drusilla has Spike call her princess, because that's what I have my bae call me as well. And I deeply appreciate that, because I literally have, like, the lines that Spike says are the exact same lines that Alex says to me, like, yes, you're my princess, you deserve a castle kind of stuff. And it's all, like, in jest, but I don't really think Drusilla and I... We kind of want it. Like, we kind of just both want to be princesses still on with that.
So you really identify with that character?
I really do. I think Drusilla and I are going to get along very well.
Do you like from what you've seen of it, do you like the Drusilla-Spike dynamic?
Yeah, like I was saying, it's fun. It's sexy. And I like the way that they interact. I think that they're always looking to do something that we don't know. They're sneaky, and I want to know more about her, what her specific energy sensing powers may be or may not be. I want to know why she's weak. I want to know why he's such, I guess we've learned he killed two slayers before, but why he's such a badass. And I want to learn also why he calls himself Spike. I think that they both present a lot of really interesting future canon to be unveiled.
Well, we know why he calls him Spike.
Was it because of spiky hair? Is that just it?
No, because he tortured his victims with a railroad spike. Giles explains that.
Yes, you're right. Okay, it's funny because I thought I made that up in my head, Caitlin, but it was actually in the episode. So yeah, there you go.
And that's actually funny because that what we can point that out now is that there's a little bit of quasi-foreshadowing when for that particular way of killing victims, when it's one of the characters says in an early episode, like, oh, you know, you might just like, I feel like, you know, I've been like killed with a railroad spike, or I don't remember the exact line, but they use the term railroad spike, and that's really funny because it comes back into play here.
This is that character that said that was reincarnated from one of Spike's past victims, if reincarnation exists. Well, it does, at least, I guess, kind of like an avatar sense of the Slayers. I think they, I don't know, we don't really seem to have too much with the Slayers. They don't seem to understand what past Slayers did. Like, they don't have the knowledge of the past Slayers.
So I'm wondering how very interesting places. Train of thought you
I had that
went into five different places.
It really did.
We haven't learned anything about reincarnation on the show. At this point, anyway.
And also, I thought that was your subtle hint at saying there's reincarnation, but I guess not.
Oh,
maybe
well,
not.
Maybe
don't
it
know.
Is, or maybe it isn't. You'll have to
no
wait
comment.
And find
there
out.
You go. Yeah. Perfect.
So, our favorite lines from this episode, Caitlin, what's yours?
Mine is when Spike first comes in and the guy is like talking about how he was at the crucifixion, and he's like, "You were there? Oh, please! If every vampire who said he was at the crucifixion was actually there, it would have been like Woodstock. I was actually at Woodstock. That was a weird gig. I fed off a flower person, and I spent the next 6 hours watching my hand move."
Oh, Spike. You know how to tell a story. How great.
He's like hovering his hand up, kind of watching it again.
And it's also, oh, it's so funny. Like, he didn't go to Woodstock to like massacre. He just went and like got high. And oh, I love it so much. So, Brittany, what's your favorite line?
Mine like played into the Snyder mythology of him knowing more than it's actually going on. Because at the time when he and Joyce are like talking about the people, Joyce says, "I didn't get much of a look, but there is something wrong with their faces." And Snyder like immediately interrupts her and it's like, "Yes, PCP, it's a gang on PCP. We've got to get out of here." And I really thought that that was like just him being paranoid and everything is wrong with this school. And now there's a gang on PCP, but it later turns out to be something more than that. Cause that's like just his cover up that he's trying to convince everyone of. But a close second is Xander just talking about Angel, who just like randomly disappears when they're all looking down. He's like, "Okay, that's it. I'm putting a collar with a little bell on that guy."
Yes.
I love when they're like, "We need his help. Tell us." And like the door is swinging.
I know. But it's so funny. I mean, the fail of Angel is just so funny. And like, he's so precious. I think it's Natalie talks about that a lot too. But like, I kind of tend to agree with that. That's why I kind of feel like it's intentional, because it's so stupid. But like, it's so adorable. I love it. So my favorite lines are exchange between Xander and Angel. Xander goes, "So when you gave him my neck to chew on, why didn't you clock him before he had a chance to clock you?" Angel goes, "I told you I couldn't make the first move. I had to see if he was buying it or not." Xander goes, "And if he bit me, what then?" And Angel goes, "Then we would have known he bought it." I love it. I love it. I love their little stupid non-friendship. And I love Angel, like, trying to be all like blasé about it, because I think you're right, like whoever said it earlier, that like, no, he probably wouldn't have let Spike kill Xander, but he like has enough dislike towards Xander to let him believe that that's what he would have done. And
I was wondering this whole time if Spike wasn't reading Xander or Angel's minds.
Why would he be able to do that?
I had the impression that the Master was able to do that. I don't know if it was actually confirmed, but I feel like that's something that's going to happen eventually. Because if they can hypnotize you, they can mess around with your brain. It feels like mind reading isn't too far off.
Can they do that? The Master was, yeah. Whatever the Master can do is different.
Yeah, he's like the oldest vampire. He has powers that nobody else has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so,
I mean,
so
that makes me also wonder if anyone else is going to be able to hypnotize anyone to that point. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
good no comment.
That's a lie. So what's your favorite line?
Mine spikes at the end. Let's see what's on TV.
Yes.
Just so nonchalant and sassy.
Yes, and not
like he's not even sassing to anyone that's still alive. Like, didn't he? No, I think there were a couple of vampires still alive that followed the Anointed One, didn't they? They overheard that still.
I don't know. Like, maybe it was to Drusilla, but maybe. You know what? It's just, and it's another thing that makes him sort of different from the other vampires. It's just that he you know, he's able to like do all this carnage and killing of both humans and vampires. And then he's like, all right, well, I want to watch TV. And like, genuinely, they're going to go watch TV. And I love it. I love it so much.
They're holding hands like as they walk over the body.
Yes. Because now they're all coupley and going to do normal stuff and watch TV. And I think that's just brilliant.
And it's such a contrast, too, from what we saw in the alleyway when Buffy's fighting off the vampire and he's just kind of standing overlooking everything. She's like, who are you? And he has this, you know, whole mysterious vibe going on. I really liked it. I think that this was the best way that I've seen any character in the show introduced so far. It was a good amount of murder, mystery, sexy and scary and sass and all bundled up into one. Funny. Yeah, it was. I think Spike's introduction helps me understand why super fans are so into him.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I'll be looking forward to hearing you guys react to future episodes. So moving on to the next episode, which is episode 4 of season 2, which is Inca Mummy Girl. There's a very short synopsis for this one. In this episode, Xander teaches a 500-year-old mummy how to eat a Twinkie. My favorite episode. When dopey Rodney knocks over a cursed seal at an Incan mummy exhibit, a soul-sucking assumed Ampara Gutierrez poses as Buffy's foreign exchange buddy. Xander, after confirming she is indeed not a praying mantis, is soon disappointed to find out that she is instead dead. He'd been making out with a corpse. She crumbles and the Scoobies walk away in silence. Cut to that beautiful animated thing that I'm scared that you went and found, but it's perfect, which shows the trio saying, let's face it, none of us are ever going to have a normal, happy relationship. I don't know who put this into the doc. Was it you?
I found that. Yeah, I Googled specifically that quote. I wouldn't just Google, like, Buffy gifts from anything. Like, I didn't think that would get me.
Yeah, please, guys, don't do that. Don't load up actors and stuff. But yeah, this is a perfect pull because you're right. They're already fulfilling this prophecy.
That's my favorite line of the series so far.
Yeah,
it's very fabulous.
Same. And their reactions, it's all good. So before we get into discussing this episode, I have to talk about my favorite scene of the whole show. You know, Karen had her My Girl song last week. I have the Twinkie scene.
Yeah.
You have to understand that Twinkies do not exist over here. There's no such thing as a Twinkie. It is a non-thing. So when I was watching TV as a young, impressionable teenager and I dreamed of moving to America and living like they did in Friends and going to an American high school and having cheerleaders and lockers and all those super exotic things that we don't have, Twinkies was like the epitome of that for me because I saw the scene, I saw Xander and What's-Her-Face, Ampara, eat these Twinkies and it looked so good and it looked so fun. And I always wanted one, and I've never had one, and I heard they went out of production, and I am devastated. So, that's
Don't worry, they're back.
Are they? Oh my god,
they are.
I must
have
one.
Yeah, it didn't last long.
I must have one, and I must eat it like he does, because that is like, it's defined for me, like American teen culture, the Twinkie. So,
did you ever see Zombieland with Woody Harrelson eating
Twinkies? Oh yeah, that's true. I forgot
that's like
about that.
Thing.
But that's
it's
true,
like a
spinach. He did have a lot of Twinkies.
Like Popeye,
but it's not the same because it's not Xander and the Inca Mummy Girl.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I would choke a lot if I was to try and shove the entirety of a Twinkie into my mouth. Like my gag reflex sucks. I can't even go to the dentist and have them like push down my tongue with the tongue depressor. And I don't know how he's able to do this.
She cheated, but I'm pretty sure they both actually ate Twinkies in that scene, which also makes me very happy because you know actors never eat stuff on TV and stuff. So.
This is like a classic American story, but in grammar school, we used to have these like field day races where we would compete with all the grades in my school. And one of the events that was timed was like, you had to like, it was a relay race. So you had to like run around the baseball field and like pass off a Twinkie, literally a wrapped Twinkie in between all of your classmates. And the class that we had an anchor every year, and I was always so happy that this kid was always in my class for like all 8 years that I was at this school because he would be our anchor at the end, and we'd give the Twinkie to him and he would do his one lap, and his job at the end was to open the Twinkie and eat it, and he could do it in one bite and he was amazing. So like we always made him the last person because he could like literally unwrap the Twinkie and eat it in like a second, so even if we were losing he would finish the Twinkie first. So that's what that scene reminded me of. And that's the only thing I think of when I see Twinkies.
That's really cute.
That's a great story, yeah.
But like classic America, run around a baseball field, but you have to eat a Twinkie at the end.
Yeah, I was just thinking
America's
that would make
pastime
me
with America's favorite snack.
So anyway, back to Buffy, which will forever be entwined with Twinkies in my mind. So it's always Buffy for me. What did you think about this episode? Very sharp turn from last week. We're kind of going away from mythology and back into Monster of the Week. Except we still had character development, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of expected it only because that was how season one was. It was like you have a master kind of centric episode where like the master is in every couple of scenes, and then you have the Monster of the Week episode, and then you have master comes back again. So it's like, oh, okay, we had Spike. I'm ready for Monster of the Week or whatever. And when I saw the title, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, we're definitely having Monster of the Week here.
But
that's fine.
But at the same time, again, it's a very important episode for Xander. And it's in a way also an important episode for Buffy because she got to meet a girl who, I mean, it's the closest thing to another Slayer that she can meet because she wasn't actually a Slayer, but she did have a very similar story. You know, she was chosen. She was the quote unquote the chosen one, like Buffy and Harry Potter. And she was destined to die for her people. And Buffy really emphasized that. She still killed her, but she really emphasized with that. Did you guys enjoy seeing that duality, or was it a little too on the nose?
Too on the nose for me. I found it strange. It was just weird. I don't know why. Like I felt like the other shoe had to drop that, like, oh, and she was a vampire slayer in her day or now.
I would have loved that, to be honest with you. I'm kind of with you. It was that parallel was a little too obvious. And again, because I love all the Slayer stuff, just knowing there was a Slayer there would have been so cool, but okay, whatever.
Well, that's a good way to get around, like, creating another Slayer, like, killing off the other. Not exactly, like, you know, resuscitating them. Like, I'm still holding on to the fact that I think that there's another Slayer out there from when Buffy was resuscitated from CPR. No comment, super fans, please. Mm. But I feel like this would have been a good time to introduce that idea, if that's where they're going, because... Yeah. Could have easily just said, like, you know, here's another way. Put a curse on someone and then you'll have more than one Slayer. There you go.
Right.
But I don't know, like, I'm excited to find out once again, like, what happens when the next Slayer is picked? Is it, like, an age thing? Like, or I should say more of, like, are you born and you're the Slayer from day one? Or is it just, like, given to you if you're 16 already? I don't know. It's just very vague to me right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to learn more about what's going on in Slayer lore.
I think I was feeling the same thing when I watched this episode, because again, like, I was hoping that this girl would be like a past Slayer who had been mummified and that's how she could come back, but no, that wasn't the case. So I mean, she was just an Incan mummy girl. And Ampata in general, like, her character sort of comes in and this romantic possibility for Xander, and this is the third Xander-ish centric episode that we've had so far. We're only just starting season two, and we've already had Teacher's Pet and The Pack, and now this one, which was all about Xander finding his place. And we haven't, and this was actually, you brought this up, Mitch, and I thought it was so interesting. We haven't had anything similar for Willow. The closest we got was that, like, robot episode.
That shall not be named.
Well, it kind of was, but again, compared to, we're learning a lot more about Xander than we're learning about Willow, I think. But we're learning about Willow through her relationships with other characters on the show, whereas Xander has one, like, failed romance and he has another failed romance. Are you enjoying this, newbies, and Caitlin as well, seeing so much of Xander? Because I know you guys are talking about him a lot.
I don't mind seeing Xander so much. I just wish he got a different type of plot that wasn't involved around romance for, like, 1 week. Even when it, like, even the weeks where it's not, like, a Xander-centric episode, like, I'm just tired of seeing him, like, mess up with Willow and, like, pine over Buffy. Like, I just want him to have something a little different for 1 week. And that would be fine. Because he is funny and he does have the best lines of the whole series. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, here we go with Xander again. It's, like, getting a little predictable.
Mm-hmm. Which, on the one hand, is kind of interesting that all his centric storylines seem to be romance-related in some ways, because that's usually what you'd expect for the female character.
Yes.
Yeah. And good, I think, point. That's fair to say, but also, like, as I get sick of seeing the same female character play that out, I'm sick of seeing the male character play that out already.
Yeah. It's a little bit exhausting, too, to see him still pine after Buffy. I'm over it. I don't know why he still cares. She easily put him down in a heartbeat. And then, you know, in this episode, he's freaking out about, oh, maybe the foreign exchange student is a man. He has male parts. He can't sleep the same house as you. Well, and he always does that, where he's always afraid of Angel staying over at Buffy's. Because, I don't know, he just has this, like, caveman mentality about Buffy that she obviously does not appreciate. And I don't even know why she puts up with him anymore. I don't know that I would be friends with Xander if I was Buffy anymore. I'd be pretty sick of him.
But you know what, though? I mean, thinking back, and again, everyone's different, but thinking back to when you were in high school, I mean, I don't know if you guys ever had those friendships where, like, you knew that someone in your friends group, like, really liked you, or you liked, more likely for me, if it was me, you would like someone in your friends group, and everyone knew, but everyone was sort of, like, tiptoeing around it because you all still wanted to be friends. And I think Buffy, Xander, and Cordelia, like, going back to your Harry Potter analogy, actually perfect analogy, once again, what do you know, that we have these three friends that have been bonded by these events that are larger than they are, but there's still these intricate jealousies between them. You know, in Harry Potter, Ron thinks that Harry likes Hermione, and Hermione and Ron clearly like each other, and they won't act on it. I mean, it's different, but it is kind of like they still stay friends, you know, because their friendship is more important, and the stuff they've been through is more important. I personally find this dynamic between them very refreshing, because it's so clear cut in shows, like, this person likes someone, then they have to like them back, you know, otherwise, like, it's not gonna work. But here we have these characters like Xander, who he's not gonna get over Buffy just because the narrative calls for him to get over Buffy, because he's not in a place where he can. And Willow, similarly, you know, she has a line in this episode. She goes, like, it's time for me to move on with Xander and find someone else. Like, she's very clear about this, but she really likes him. You know, she can't just turn off her emotions, because I feel like they're fictional, I know this, but it feels like they're actual emotions that she has for an actual real person. And in real life, it's not that simple. And it is complicated, and it is awkward. That was a long rant there, I'm sorry, but
it's okay. I think I'm more disturbed by the Xander-Buffy plot, because I had a girl that really, really liked me and would, I guess it's a bit of a different situation, would blatantly say, like, oh my god, why can't you be straight? I need to date you. And it's kind of like, some girls say that as like a cutesy thing, but she kind of did it in like a stalkery kind of way. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't fun. It felt like Xander's reactions to Buffy, like, continued trying to impress. And it wasn't as protective, I guess. It wasn't as, you can't be around boys because they're going to corrupt you from my love or something. But it definitely makes me feel uncomfortable when I don't respond back. That's like one of the only situations that I can think of where I had like someone not getting the hint. And I don't know, I like to think that as a reasonable human being, I would back off if someone was to tell me that, no, I don't like you like that. I'd be okay with it. I'd force myself to just move on, get over it, find someone else. It's silly how high school does that to you.
That's exactly what he did in this episode, isn't it? You know,
he tried, but I would, you know, she was dead.
Yeah. And I would just say, before we get into Inca Mamiga, I would just say that if you're worried, like, if you're legitimately worried at this point in the watch about the way the show is presenting Xander, or if you think the show is somehow glorifying his clearly problematic behavior, I would just watch how Giles reacts to Xander, because Giles has no patience for Xander. He has no patience for Xander's immaturities. He has these great, self-sacrificing, intelligent girls saving the world, and Xander kind of comes in, cracks jokes, and he's being very selfish about all of this. And Giles knows this. And I think as the audience, we need to just remember that the writers know what kind of character they're setting up. And Xander is flawed, and he is unsympathetic, and he is just plain wrong in his approach to some of these things. But to me, I find that very interesting. As opposed to him just having been this, like, normal human hero sidekick who is as clearly in the right morally and has no significant flaws. And I think part of the joy of watching the show is we'll have to watch Xander and negotiate with ourselves how much of of his, what he does is good and how much of it isn't. And we have to find out if he ever does sort of grow out of this thing he's doing right now, if he ever does sort of learn to pay attention to other people's feelings, you know? And that's kind of, that is his character, but it is a very, I think he's a, it makes him very human. I don't know if you have anything to say about that, Caitlin, or...
I mean, I think you hit it pretty much on the head. I find Xander kind of awful, but he's meant to be that way.
Exactly. It's that, don't worry anyway, but if you're watching the show for the first time, also if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh my God, how could they put this character on TV? Like, they know, you know, don't worry about it. But Xander can still be great, even though he's not 100% on the mark about, like, he is very clueless. We, in this episode, obviously a part of the plot is this foreign exchange student program that obviously introduces Ampata and gives Xander this new temporary love interest. There's a question of the doc that goes, did anyone ever do a foreign exchange student program? Guys, this is my life. I have never not been a foreign exchange student. Anyone else?
I've once had three people from England staying at my house that were like,
well, there you go,
soccer coaches. And I think they must, I don't know, I was so young.
I think you mean football coaches, Mitch.
Well, yes, but we were playing in America, so I guess we have to call it soccer because then it gets confusing because we don't say American football in America because then it's just like, they call it football, yeah. But yeah, that's it was a fun experience. Like I learned a lot of culture just like sitting around and talking to them. I remember watching like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone. I know, Selena.
Yes. Thank you.
I watched that movie with one of them, and I was asking them what Oliver Wood was saying before the Quidditch match, because he says something about like taking a bludgeon to the head, didn't wake up in the hospital for like four more days. But he mumbles it so quickly, and they couldn't understand it either. And I was disappointed. I was like, in the actor, I was like, it's not just an accent thing. He's just mumbling it. But I have like the specific Harry Potter memory with this one British guy. It was fun.
Oh, like foreign exchange to me is like someone speaks a different language than you. Cause like, I mean, I lived in Scotland for 4 months and that was like, it wasn't like a huge culture shock.
That's pretty much a foreign language.
Yeah. Some of my professors, like ones who are from different areas, I can understand better than other ones. Like my professor from Glasgow, forget about it. Couldn't understand a word said. And then we went to the Highlands and I'm like, I don't understand anything that's going on up here. Yeah. So that was a little weird. Like luckily lectures were recorded because I could listen to them later, like in my little like flat room so that I can understand what was going on in lessons. But yeah, I mean, that I guess that was a little bit of a foreign exchange.
Definitely. I've been to a bunch of different international schools where, like, you know, the melding of cultures and, you know, national costumes and all the different languages. And, you know, you find out that all the stereotypes are kind of true. In some ways about like when you all meet up together and you have to study and live together, and it's super fun. It's great. Yay culture. And also yay for shout out to my Scandinavian brother, Swedish Sven, who is the closest that I'm ever going to get to be represented on this show. And I'm A-okay with that. I thought Sven was amazing. you know, you talk about all this kind of different ways of representing people, and when you represent Scandinavians, usually this dumb / whorish archetype is what is used in American TV. So it was fun to find out that Swedish Sven was actually not as dumb as Cordelia assumed.
Yes, American Horror Story had horrible Swedish representation this season. They were the worst.
Hello, I am Swedish, and I would like be slutty all the time. Like, it's awful. Awful.
Brittany, you know you're not convincing me to watch Hotel anymore by saying yes. This.
They're in the first episode. You already saw them.
I must have forgotten. It was that bad.
Back to Buffy, though. Did you guys like that? Those interactions between Cordelia and Sven? I thought they were amazing. I thought they were hilarious.
Yeah, they were funny.
Mm-hmm. They were cute.
I was more interested in like the mummy stuff this episode. Yeah. So like all like the little things were like they were there, but I really liked the mythology of what they set up with the mummies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
See, Brittany, I found that funny because I found the mummy stuff to be the most boring and just weird. It didn't matter at all to me, especially since she wasn't a slayer, even though they set it up like she could have been. It was such a hit and a miss for me. The whole episode was me looking for things more important to happen, as in Willow having like this guy crush on her that he had this weird introduction too. It's kind of speaking of like Cordelia and Sven. They're outside. She's like, speaking weird words to him from I don't even know what language. like Spanish or something. And then this guy named Oz is in a band or something, and he's, I don't know, like playing his guitar out in the courtyard. He seems to be kind of fun and cool. And what character is talking to Oz, if any of the super fans remember?
That is Devon.
Devon. Who? Well, they were talking about, I think, Cordelia being hot, weren't they? They were, yes, like, oh, she's such a hottie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I wish I could have been her foreign exchange student or something crazy.
Just boys being boys. And yeah, but Oz is like, yeah, she's cool, but she's not my type. Then he's,
well, it's funny too that Cordelia is so convinced that she, in her mind, by her standards, her foreign exchange student is going to be so hot simply from the, I think she said, either the name, the culture, whatever. She was just sold on the fact that this was a hot man.
She's probably then, just like seen a lot of American TV where they stereotype Swedish people.
Yeah, that's, I mean, she does, I won't ruin my favorite line quite yet, but we all know what she says there.
Yes.
That definitely confirms that, Selena, if you ask me.
Yeah. That was a really cute moment, though, with speaking of these sort of fringe characters in this episode, you know, when what's-her-face Willow is in her Eskimo costume, which, by the way, was adorable. Her little turn is like my, one of my favorite things about the show. And she was watching Xander and Ampata dance, and she was being really sad. And then you looked up on the stage and Oz is like, ooh, who is that girl? And that was kind of cute because it's like, okay, well, maybe there are people out there who are noticing Willow. Which is kind of nice. And they should. She's so cute.
And like, noticing her in her Eskimo outfit.
I know. Yes, because she wasn't like the other girls.
Oh, that Eskimo booty.
Yes. That's a good one. So, but Brittany, I mean, there's not a lot of points in about the mummy stuff, I guess, because Mitch,
I know, and I was so disappointed. I kept,
let's talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, that always happens when Mitch makes the doc. I think he skips over the stuff that I'm interested in. This happened a lot in our last round.
Just for you, Brittany.
I know. Yeah, I loved all the mummy stuff. Like, the whole episode, every time, like, they would go to the bronze or something, I'm like, go back to Giles. Like, he has books and interesting facts on mummies and needs things translated. And let's go to the museum again, you know? Yeah, I was just really, like, I thought it was a cool, like, little sidetrack mission for them. Mission. It's not really a mission. But, you know, like, little thing for them to dig into, like, mummy mythology. Because we've had, like, you know, like, they're, like, witches things and, like, stuff like that. So, like, I mean, it's interesting to have the mummies in here. So I thought it was a cool, like, quote-unquote monster of the week.
Yeah.
We gotta hit our classic monsters.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I'm ready for Frankenstein to pop up. And
well, he's been there. We had that already.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. When I'm not on the episode, I just don't. You know, I forget that I'm like, oh, I didn't talk to anyone about this.
I wonder if anyone can write in, or if anyone just knows off the top of their head, or if anyone can Google, if the name Empada is meant to be gender neutral.
Oh, yeah.
That's because a good question. Seems very quick that they bought into the fact that that was a woman already.
Well, I guess there was actually a real... Oh, no, wait. That was real within the show. Never mind. I can't even find anything on Ampara that isn't about Buffy on this Google, this thing called Google. But
on this Google.
I think it's just, you know, the thing of there's a Peruvian exchange student coming and the name ends with an A, you know, which in English would imply that it was a female. So I guess that's just they didn't think any further of it.
Erica, whatever.
Yeah, Ampara.
Yeah.
So you can, and whereas in other languages it's much more common that a boy names and an A, you know, especially Italian, you know. So
Google tells me that the name means defender, which is kind of a nice tie back to Buffy.
Yes. Again. What a coincidence that she should just happen to be a defender.
Well, I mean, I get confused too with the lore of what this mummy is doing, because the mummy is sacrificed to protect, I think, the certain culture that sacrificed her from supernatural things, right?
No, just in general. It's just I guess supernatural stuff was involved because she was able to come back to life because of the seal, but I think it was just in general back then they used to do these human sacrifices a lot.
Why have a seal that allows someone to come back to life, though, if it's broken? Why not just not make a seal in the first place and call it a day?
Because that was part of the ritual of protecting the people.
I guess. I wasn't so into it.
Like, Brittany, with a broken seal, they would not have a mummy, I guess. Oh, yeah, they did. I don't know.
And also...
Well, and she was kind of alive because she says she was listening and all these stops that she had. So she was never, like, totally dead.
Mm-hmm.
which sucks. Like she's what I imagine. She's what I imagine a dried out vampire being and looking like immortal but not able to die, even though you look like you are.
Oh, that would be awful.
But now, oh god, now it's even worse because she's like crumbled up into pieces. But she felt that.
I think she's dead now. I think it's okay. We can leave her to rest. She's fine. She's gone. Poor Ampata. Did anyone else feel super bad for her? I felt super bad for her.
I did. Yeah.
I did. I wanted her to just like. Yeah, I wanted her to re-be a mummy and still be able to travel the world.
Yeah.
You know, just like return her back to what, you know, how she was and it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. But what wasn't it amazing, though, and again, going back to the Sander and Willow friendship, which I just think is so great, when Sander flat out chose Willow over Ampata. Like, he's already made it. He articulated really well in this episode. He loves Willow as a friend, and he's hoping that she will, her feelings for him will be more friend-like, I guess, because he wants to keep their friendship. And Ampata was this new girl, she was super hot, and she was really into him. But when it comes down to it, like, Ampata is like, just let me take Willow and we can be together forever. There was not even a question. He was like, bitch, please. Like, no, it's not gonna happen. And I loved it. I love that. And I'm glad he didn't hesitate. That would have been awful.
Yeah, no, he, when it comes, boils down to, like, what needs to happen, he realizes what's important, which I think is always an admirable trait in
Xander. That's, again, and that does sort of make up for some of the teenage boy stuff that he's doing, is that at the end of the day, he will always put Willow first because he loves Willow as a friend. He will even put her above Buffy. You know, we saw this in the first episode of the season, and I really admire this. I really love it.
You know, I have a question too. On the same note of Willow and Ampata, there's a moment when Ampata almost sucks out Willow's soul, and she doesn't do it, obviously, so that we can still have Willow. I wonder if, even in canon, it was to happen, the show wouldn't have been able to actually show that kiss happening, because I don't know at what point in time TV was more okay with showing same-sex anything on TV. Because, I mean, when you think about it, Ampata's doing it in a sexy way. Every time she tries to suck out someone's soul, she's, like, luring them in so she can kiss them. And I just found it unique that if it was groundbreaking, that they almost had, I guess, a girl-on-girl kiss in the show. And that's kind of cool if you think about it being groundbreaking in not only horror TV, but also just in social stereotypes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I never thought about that. Like, that never even crossed my mind. But this was, like, what, 1998? Yeah. So it was probably, you might be right. I don't know.
Because I think we're from a day and age now that it just, if there's a gay character on any given TV show, it barely phases us because it's whatever. But yeah, to have a show back then, I think it might have been a bit more poignant, let's say, to viewers to see anything same sex of any sort.
Yeah. And that's like, we're watching it now. We're just like, oh, well, she would have just sucked out like a woman's soul. Like, that's no big deal. But yeah, maybe.
Right.
That's a good point. So Jacob Black's dad, the aka the bodyguard, I like that. I'm glad you noticed that too, Mitch. I figured you might.
The second he screamed on the screen, I knew that voice. I was like, there he is. There's Billy Black. We're good.
I noticed it for the first time watching it this time, so I'm still noticing new stuff. So what was he? Was he still human? Was he immortal? Was he a supernatural ninja person? What do you guys think? I'm kind of sad he's dead. He was super interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he had to die because I don't know if we're going to be revisiting
Inca Mummy Girls.
Specifically, maybe mummies again, but I don't think it's specific, like, you know, sect of mummies. When he first appeared on screen, I'm like, oh my god, he can walk.
Oh, that's great.
Awful. Okay, yeah.
That's adorable.
Isn't he in a wheelchair also in House of Cards? I'm pretty sure he is.
I mean, maybe he's just sitting a lot.
I think he's just sitting a lot. Like, I'm thinking of the pool scene, you know, with the dog and the meat. Regardless, I don't think the actor is
another
really
thing we can look up.
Maybe he is.
You can safely look up this actor, so you're fine. You can research that after.
I forgot he was in that until you said the meat in the pool scene.
Right.
No, I think he is in a wheelchair in there.
Yeah, he might be paraplegic.
Well, we will look this up and
we'll
let you know on our Twitter feed, in case you're wondering this and doesn't want to look it up yourself for some reason. So did you guys have any other thoughts on this episode? I have one thing I have to ask. Who the hell offers to unpack somebody else's luggage? Like, in what reality is that okay? I would never let someone unpack my luggage.
That's kind of invasive.
I know. I was thinking this like every time. And then Buffy, she's like, no, I'll do it later. And Buffy just like opens her trunk anyway. And I'm like, and then she like pulls out her underwear and she's like, ooh, this is weird underwear. And I'm like, what if that's Empata's underwear? You're totally like, that's none of your business.
Like, what if she just likes to dress like a man?
Yes,
done.
Yes. Like, that was so weird to me.
Like a man, whatever. But yeah, it's, I mean, I don't even like it, like, when a bellboy wants to take my luggage up to my room or, like, go in my room for, like, I never have housekeeping come in when I'm at hotels. I refuse because I'm just like, I don't need someone else, like,
touching
poking around my things.
And judging you. And yeah, no.
Because I'm sure they get curious. And then even if they're not stealing something, they do want to just, like, whatever, like, peek in your suitcase. It's right there. It's just awkward.
And all of your mummies. It's just, it's weird, you know?
All your dead body parts. Yeah. Didn't she? Yeah, she had. So can we talk about Rodney, too? How did that all go down that she was able to? So she sucked out his soul.
Yes. He took he broke the seal. That's how she got free.
Right. I can't remember what happened when she sucked the soul out of anyone else. If we even saw their bodies.
It's not the soul she sucks out. It's the
life force.
Yeah, life of them.
Okay.
The water. I thought it was all the fluids, actually, like the liquids.
That'd be interesting,
too. Yeah, she basically mummifies them and takes all that stuff into herself.
I guess no curse. Gross. They can't come back either.
Yeah, no, they're dead.
Because what does she do with Billy Black? I can't remember.
She sucks him as well.
No, like what happens to
him? They find him in the bathroom.
Did his body just kind of crumble to the ground, or did we see him mummified, or what?
He was mummified as well.
He was mummified,
yeah,
okay.
They said they found a body in the bathroom.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to imagine, for some reason, Selena, you wrote in Dingles Eat My Baby, but you skipped over that fact.
Oh, yeah, that was just the name of the band. I think that was really funny. I like it.
So it's funny, because I know that where I was talking about the Bronze having bands that are being showcased, is Dingles Eat My Baby played by a real band? Is that band?
Yes.
So that band's for real. And if Seth Green was really in a band.
No.
Fill me in here.
No. Hold on. I'm stalling. I'm looking it up. So basically, like, Dingoes Ate My Baby is the name of this band that Devin and Oz, these two characters, are playing in. Oh, yeah. The music that they play in this episode is composed by a band called Four Star Mary. And I thought I had more trivia, and I don't. For some reason, I mixed them up with the ones that made the Buffy theme, Nerf Herder, but that was not them. So it's just a band called Four Star Mary.
That's a Star Wars reference, isn't it?
Yeah, Nerf Herder, yeah.
Interesting. Well done. It's almost like a Harry Potter, like, wizard rock band to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Strange. I didn't know Star Wars had that.
So the Buffy theme is actually a, like, Star Wars wizard rock. We just never knew.
Star Wars wizard rock. Yes, please.
A Jedi rock,
that,
I guess.
Like, yeah, Jedi rock.
Jedi rock.
Why is that not a thing? Anyway, this is a different discussion. Force rock. Perfect. So let's move into our favorite scenes because we're running a little long now. So, Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was just when we see Sven with one of Cordelia's friends complaining about Cordelia being like, I thought this would be great. And then I got her.
Does she even speak English? Yeah. That was beautiful. Beautiful little nod to Sven, my favorite character of all time. Brittany, what about you?
Mine's just Buffy beating up Giles in the beginning of the episode because it's always my favorite part of any time they interact is when he's like, he thinks he's capable of training her in physical combat and he's just not, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And she was threatening him to go to the dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so out of his element, isn't he? It's amazing. Mitch, you stole my favorite scene.
Yes, I did. I love writing the doc for a week that I'm on because I can write things like the Twinkie scene. And I said, no, that's commitment because they didn't like, you know, they chuckled a little bit, but they didn't go out of character, in my opinion. And I like that because you usually could have shoving a giant cream filled cake donut thingy all the way into your mouth. That's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I like that, too. Mine is my favorite scene is a little random because I couldn't have the Twinkie scene. That moment when Ampata is at the party and she drags this random guy who we don't know into a room and she like almost drains him. And he goes like, aren't you with Sander? And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. And he's just like so like thrown off by it. And he's like so confused by what's happening. But she's like, okay, I'll make out with you. I like it. I enjoy moments in Buffy where these background characters sort of actually have a personality, you know what I mean? Like, he was clearly like he knew Xander and he was like into what was going on and sort of commenting on it, and luckily he managed to escape, so that was a very nice little scene there.
It makes me wonder if the Scoobies are like the center of attention at the school now that Cordelia's involved with them, especially.
Everyone's like secretly talking about them. Yeah, maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe. Yeah, that would be interesting. Favorite lines, Caitlin?
Mine was a Giles and Buffy exchange. So Giles says, "You have responsibilities that other girls do not." And Buffy says, "Oh, I know this one. Slaying entails certain sacrifice, blah, blah, bitty, blah. I'm so stuffy, give me a scone."
I think Giles' reply is like, "Oh, you know me so well."
Yeah, exactly.
I have something embarrassing to admit. I'm not sure I know what a scone is.
It's like the British equivalent of a Twinkie. No,
that's
it's not
true.
It's not.
But it's delicious. They're delicious.
It's like a bun with pieces of chocolate, but it's like really hard bread, and it's really sweet. It's like
sell
a cake.
At Starbucks, you can get one. They
I'm imagining like Hagrid's tea cakes when you say hard bread.
Oh no, it's like a bun. It's like
yeah,
a round bun.
High. And you put butter on them.
I imagine the scone. When I'm imagining a scone, I'm imagining for some reason like a crepe, like a French crepe. I don't know why.
Might have been close.
Oh, you don't even have to put chocolate in them. That just sometimes. But you can also put raisins in them, or you can just have nothing in them. And you can Google scone. That's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
They're sold in like a little package, I guess? Or you like
no,
home
you
make
bake
them?
They're a baked
pastries, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
In Bath, in England, they have very famous scones.
Yes. No, I'm going to have to go there and try
you
them
might
one
have
day.
To. Yes. Brittany, what's your favorite line?
My favorite line was Xander because it kind of, you know, just I loved his comment on the museum and he was like, typical museum trick, promise human sacrifice, deliver old pots and pans.
Yes.
The museum guide's like, come this way for like a human sacrifice. And then it's just like, this is old pottery. And
yeah.
You know,
he's so
and of
right.
course, we're looking at Xander like, if only you knew.
You're so right. He has all the best lines. It's really, he's such, it's so many good things about him, too.
There's always a Sokka of each show. And I think.
And there's always a Xander of each show, is I think what you meant to say.
Because, yeah. Okay. I'll go with my line. It was Cordelia's. This whole student exchange thing has been a horrible nightmare. They don't even speak American. Yes.
So good. So good. I love it.
I know.
So funny.
It's perfect. I mean, it doesn't make me like Cordelia, unfortunately, but I do like her because she's so stupid. Mm. It's just kind of fun to watch her, like, be dumb.
She's not even dumb, though. That's what's good.
So does she? So she really knows that saying, like, speak American is a stupid thing to say, but she's just saying it to, like, put up a front that she's dumb?
Well, she has layers. It could
like
go
an onion.
Either way. Yeah, like an onion.
There you go.
My favorite line is between Buffy and Willow and Xander. Willow goes, when Buffy goes to talk to Rodney, Willow goes, the non-violent approach is probably better here. And Buffy goes, I wasn't going to use violence. I don't always use violence, do I? And Xander goes, the most important thing is that you believe it. the triple act of them is great. And it's so funny, too, that Buffy... Like, doesn't even realize that this is how she's coming across, just beating everyone up. She does always use violence. It's true. And you know what is funny, too, is that Willow is always, like, interacting with all of these outsiders. Like, if you've noticed, like, she has, like, a rapport with all of these loners. Because she's, like, tutoring them or, like, you know, she just knows them from middle school or something. And knowing that Xander and Willow's, their knowledge of the kids in school goes so much beyond Buffy's is really realistic, I think. Because Buffy is still kind of new.
Why isn't Willow a little bit more disturbed that he's dead yet? I don't want to go on this whole why isn't Willow disturbed train again. But I don't understand why someone she was tutoring wasn't more of, like, a shock dead. She was kind of just like, oh, he's dead. You know, typical week at our school.
This is what makes her so why she works as the character she is, because she's able to compartmentalize so well. I think Willow has a very clear priority. She's like, I have my people, and as long as my people are okay, I'm okay, and I can deal with everything.
Expendable.
Yeah, like I can deal with it because she knows they all know that everyone's gonna die and there's gonna be lots of casualties. You know,
why even bother? Like, if you were like a normal human, like Willow or Xander, why even bother living in Sunnydale anymore?
How
I guess
would
they're
leave
like,
their kids.
I would tell my parents. I'd be like, "There's some weird crap going on here. People are dying left and right. Don't you see this? I can't go to school here. Get me out."
Mm. Yeah, well, it's probably super cheap to live in Sunnydale. I don't know.
I assume the real estate prices are really low.
Yes. It's one of those things. I mean, you're right. Someone else might decide to run off, but these people are really attuned to compartmentalizing things, I think.
Yeah, I got there was a really great Hellmouth reference in something that I finally got today. It was a headline yesterday that was just like Grey's Anatomy located over the Hellmouth of Seattle. And I was like, yes.
You got that one.
That
see? Accurate.
That is so true. It's not even funny.
This is like why you need to watch Buffy. Like, even if you're like, oh, I don't know if I like it. It's like you will finally understand all of those references.
And yeah. I was like, oh, I get that. That's funny.
Like, please tell me how anyone could really be attached to another human being with a spike stuck between the two, have them both alive, coherent, and not in pain. I don't understand.
I know.
It's just so much. It is so the Hellmouth.
I have no transition from Hellmouth to contact information, so I'm just going to go for it. We're going to move into listener feedback now, but before we do, you can contact us in one of several different ways. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr. Rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Please note that if you do contact us, do not post any spoilers. Please. I feel so bad because on Twitter, someone said something that was like not even really spoilery. And I was like, don't even say that to them. Because I'm like, I'm aware of how much you guys are being spoiled just because Buffy is so old. So I'm like, just don't add any other spoilers to the pile. So I feel bad for that.
I feel like people are trying to be like, this isn't a spoiler, so I'm going to word it this way. And I'm like, it's still a spoiler.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the episodes yet.
Exactly. So don't. And I kind of do this too, because I assume you guys have already watched them by the time
I
watched
them. Fine. I mean, it's my own fault for not being on top of it.
But still, just be aware, Brittany is the one handling the Twitter. And even if you say, ooh, I cannot wait for the blonde guy, you know, I'm not saying his name, so it's not a spoiler. It's still a spoiler, guys. Just beware. we want to keep these guys as spoiler free as is possible, which is not 100%. Anyway, you can also leave us an iTunes review. If you rate us 5 stars, then I guess I will pet you, call you princess, and let you lap blood from my face.
I feel like this works for both Buffy and the 100.
It's true. Oh my god, that's my type in TV shows. Jesus Christ. Yeah, so there you go. That's your incentive. Or just rate us 5 stars and I will leave you alone. So, you know, you can choose. Listener feedback. We have some tweets. Mitch, do you want to get our first one?
Sure thing. Our tweet from Stephanie Morrell at Stephanie Morrell says, Natalie, I'm there with you on the Buffy amnesia. Every time I watch, I conveniently forget the monster of the week plots. Only the big stuff sticks.
Mm. I think I don't see any of the episodes of Monster of the Week because every episode does something with the characters as well. Like, there's never a bottle episode, which doesn't matter, you know? So I guess that's kind of along the same lines. Like, I remember the character moments in the episode, but I forget, like, stupid stuff like teacher's pet monster. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't usually rewatch the Monster of the Week ones. Mm-hmm. When I rewatch, it's usually the mythology-heavy ones. So yeah. Those are the ones that I remember best.
That's always my intention, but then I always end up watching everything because I'm like, well, if I skip this episode, then I'll skip this really important moment between these characters or whatever. So and next one, Caitlin, can you get that one?
Sure. Leah says, continuing with Buffy season 2 along with Rewatchable, and I love Jenny Calendar.
Oh,
please,
yay!
Let her stick around show.
I love her.
Notice
too.
Notice that, huh? I love that.
Oh, that line? Yeah. Yes. Are you guys enjoying her?
I love her and Giles so much.
Me too.
He's so helpless.
She wasn't in these episodes, was she?
Or was she? No. She was in the one with the football game.
Oh, yeah. True. Yeah.
She was in the one with Spike, I think, because she was at the school with everyone.
Okay. I don't remember.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Janeth Gutierrez, Brittany?
Oh, yeah, you said her name, so I thought you were going to do it. Janeth says, listening to the new episode, and I love how the superfans completely did a poker face or voice when a certain topic was brought up. So I guess good job, superfans.
Yeah, good job.
I have no idea what this episode is. Yeah, it happened.
I don't know what actually happens, but I remember the moment that Natalie and Karen were like, oh my God. And that's all they said.
Okay.
And it's good because it's like, I have no clue what they're oh my God-ing at, because they could have been confirming, denying, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was
or
a very
thinking
good
of something else that is unrelated, but they both happened to think of at the same time.
Yes, I'm sure that was what it was. They saw that Grey's Anatomy article and they were like, oh my god, it's Helma. That's what.
Yeah,
it was.
We totally get yes. that reference, yeah. even though we don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
Uh-huh. Sarah Preston says, love James Marsters, love Spike. Buffy was the best choice for rewatchable. I agree. I've been saying this for years.
And now it's going to take years to finish.
I know. What are we getting ourselves into? Oh my god. And Mitch, the bottle episode, speaking of.
Yeah. Speaking of, at the Bottle Ep wrote, one of the first things I did when I went to the U.S. in 2010 was buy a pack of Twinkies based on this scene in The Mummy.
I'm applauding you, whoever you are, Bottle Episode. Yes, me too. Well, I've never had one, but that's what I would do. And
so you have to get perfect, on that. I'm sure you can, like, order them on Amazon if you wanted to.
Perfect example of, though, like, tweeting things at us. The Spike tweet came in, like, before we even started these episodes.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
It's okay. And see, like, with stuff like Spike, like, obviously he's introduced and he's really awesome. And it's not like we're not going to say he's really awesome. But just, you know, don't imply things that...
Yeah. No, I mean, this one was, like, we didn't even record episodes 1 and 2.
Oh.
So I was like, okay. I know, like, I know everyone's excited because a lot of people have seen this show and are, like, really pumped and want us to get to certain things. But I'm like, all right. It's okay.
Keep it down. It'll be fine. They'll get there.
Excited. Yeah. Tweet the superfans directly.
Yes, yes,
do
that.
They will talk to death about it. And that's fine. I don't need to go there and look at that stuff.
Exactly. Yes, protect our spoiler-free, what's it called? Hosters.
Hosters.
My God. So late
I
for
like
me.
That. I'm going with it.
And Caitlin, the first comment on Hypable?
Sure, this is from Jalen Jade, who has something to say about Mitch. Says this is more directed towards Mitch and his concerns about age. If you were cursed or blessed to live for hundreds of years but look like you're a teenager or in your early 20s, you'd be forced to hang out with or date people in the world who looked your age for exactly the reasons you keep bringing up. If a 20-year-old is hanging out with a 90-year-old in a way that looks like friends and not grandparent/child, it's going to draw outside attention. Whereas 220 is looking people, is it going to draw a second glance from anyone?
Yeah, we both answered this, Mitch, on Hypable.
Yes, we did. I thought that was an interesting conversation we were having, Selena. And I agree. It's a good point. Like, if someone is 20-year-old looking, it's easier in society for them to date 20-year-old looking people. And that's just that. You can't be like 9 years old going out. I mean, because then there are all sort of terms in society that we have, like cougars and robbing the cradle and all that. And obviously it's not meant to be a good thing in our society.
There's that Blake Lively movie where she like lives forever and like just goes through series of marriages with every like couple of decades.
Listen, Age of Adeline is my jam. I brought that up actually last week because we were talking about that in relation to Angel dating, you know, younger, because she does too. And I was like, it's good for her because she talks like she's from a different age. Angel doesn't. And it doesn't make sense to me how he still acts like he's, you know, 20, but in the 1990s.
Well, he's a great actor.
Yes, well. Well, you know.
David Boreanaz or
Boreanaz.
Angel?
Yeah, Boreanaz. Both. But no, and I said this before, and I just think it's so interesting. It's actually something that I always find interesting in the world. Semiotics, academics, it's, I really think, you know, we assume that when you are a certain age, you have to act a certain way, and it's just not true. It's just something we assume people have to do. There's no, like, your age is just a number, cliche, you know, you are not actually required to act a certain way because you get older. It's just because the people around you do. And when in Angel's case, it's even more because he doesn't get older. He stays the same and his body is arrested in this moment. And so is his mind. He's going to experience things, but he's never going to go through those life experiences like getting married and having kids and getting a job and all those things that would eventually lead you to feel mentally old. And you know, you keep talking about dating, but like, who's even to say he's dated that much? Like, he doesn't strike me as a particularly active guy.
It's funny, too, because there's, like, a throwaway line that Willow has that's, like, talking about calculating, if you only dated two people for 1 year, for 200 years, or however that meant, however that sentence was supposed to work, you would have dated 400 people. So that gave me the impression that since he wasn't denying it, it was like, okay, yes, he's dated people. I think he was there in that scene, too, to hear her say that. Mm. I could be wrong.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird scenario, I guess. if he has or if he hasn't. It just the way he acts, he strikes me as like someone who has not. But okay. Well, I guess we'll
other
find
than Darla,
out,
we can assume, because they had a little bit of a thing going on.
True. And our final email, Brittany?
Our email is from James, and it says, "Hi, guys. Heard you guys mention vampire reflection and how that might translate into other mediums, such as the recording of sound. I've never even thought about sound recording, so that was really cool. One thing that has always bothered me was the use of photography in the Buffyverse. Since cameras use mirrors and capture pictures, why are we able to photograph vamps? Still enjoying the podcast and great job on reducing the spoilers. Grr, arg, James." You know, pictures, like, they don't show up in pictures, though, do they? I guess unless it's digital.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm sitting here because, like, I'm messing up my vampire mythologies now. I'm not sure.
I know.
Were digital cameras even popular in this time of?
I was just thinking of today for some reason.
Well, I think the whole mirror thing and recording people in, like, video cameras and stuff, I think it's different, but I don't know why. I think maybe, I don't know, guys. The rules are bendable, I guess. I don't know. I've never figured this out. Caitlin, do you know?
I can't remember. Have we seen vampires in photographs in the show?
Or
I don't
on video? I feel like maybe.
There have been, like, drawings, but I don't remember seeing them in photographs.
Okay.
No, well, I can't think of any.
If we ever get to that on the show, then whoever superfan is on that episode will have to deal with that. So just hope that's not me if it happens. Thanks for that, for those comments, everyone. And please continue to write in. Just remember to keep your communication spoiler-free. Next week, Season 2, Episode 5, Reptile Boy, and Episode 6, Halloween.
Yeah, really great poker voice there.
We said Halloween, which is Halloween.
Who's to say it's not the other one? I don't know. I'm not excited. Who are you? I don't know what's happening.
I am so excited for Reptile Boy because it sounds right up my alley.
I'm automatically thinking of Jackson from Teen Wolf. That's the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear Reptile Boy.
Huh, yeah.
And Halloween is Jamie Lee Curtis, honestly.
Of
so
course, yes.
Maybe I'll get my wish. I'll get both.
Maybe you will. Who knows? Anyway, that's going to be super exciting, and the gang is recording that next week, so stay tuned. And if you haven't already, subscribe to us via iTunes so you always get the latest episodes of Rewatchable straight to your podcast listening device. Until next time, thanks for listening. My name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Goodbye. Grr-ark.
Bye. Bye.
Sorry, it was either unmute or drop my water that was in my hand that I could have unmuted with. I saved the water, guys.
Good, we're glad.